You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Washington to Hollywood and right back to Wisconsin, it's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach. Connecting the dots on the stories shaping our world with smart takes, sharp humor, and plenty of personality.
You know, I really expected more professional behavior from you.
It's news and culture without the noise.
Yeah, I'm on!
Here's Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Nightlight. I am Pete Schwabba, sitting just across the state from Mr. Greg Bach. We are just a couple of dudes on this Monday, bringing you a little light into your ever-approaching but lighter later night. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. I'm feeling good. It's a Monday. We're here. Can't get away from it. Can't get around it. Just finishing some dinner, finishing some work. And now I'm with all of you all tonight, and I'm very excited about that.
I always say I don't know what to do with myself sometimes on the weekends, so I actually like weekdays. I know that sounds crazy, but it's great to be on the air talking about things that are interesting and fun. Dom Lee in Madison, working the board. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready to go. I got a nature's bar right here, and I'm feeling refreshed. I'm feeling refreshed.
Those are foraged, including the packaging, from nature.
Really? The more you know.
Yep. That's like a lot of food talk right in the first couple minutes. I like it.
I have a bag of avocados right here that aren't ripe, so you can't eat them. Blech.
Oh, that's the worst. You ever try to eat a not ripe avocado, like you just smash the heck out of it? It still just doesn't taste.
Oh, it just hurts your jaw.
Here's what I'm dealing with tonight, guys, on this Monday. I went and got a well-deserved, much-earned haircut today.
Okay. Ooh.
And my beautician, barber, whatever you want to call her, cut my sideburns off. And okay. Before I could say anything, she just like went, zzz, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is like our fourth time together. That was an oversight. Now I feel like I'm in college. I've got nothing here above the ear. It just is bare all the way down.
Did you really say something to her, or did she do it and you let it go?
I didn't say anything to her. I just assumed I have sideburns. And she's one of these people who is lovely. I really like her, but she gets going on a story and it's just like my sideburns are the victims. And, you know, they weren't like Elvis sideburns, but they shaped my face, Greg.
They'll be back before you know it. It's fine. They grow back.
So that's my downer news of the day. But I'll get over it. It's great to see you guys. And great
if
to
that's
be
your downer news.
Well, it's only 5 o'clock. But we got a great show tonight, Greg, don't we?
We have an absolutely amazing show for everyone tonight. Let's see here. Later on the program, in a little bit, actually, we'll be talking to Kathy O'Neill, who's the author of Weapons of Math. M-A-T-H, Destruction, talking about the dangers of big data. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking to a friend of yours, Tim Sowers, who's the co-CEO and Chief Artistic Experiences Officer. That's a long title. At the Overture Center. There's lots going on. We're going to have some big stories coming up in just a moment. But, Pete, I think it may be time for the question of the night.
Are you serious already?
I'm dead serious. I am dead serious about the question of the night.
Go, baby, go, Dom.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
All right, guys, here we go. What is the greatest live show you've ever seen? That is tonight's question of the night. And it's kind of an honor. We tried to pair it with Tim Sowers being here because that's what they do at the Overture Center. They put on live shows and they're outstanding. So what is the greatest live show you've ever seen? Phone lines are open. Text line is open. As always, 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. You can also text us on the Civic Media app. Very easy to use and a great way to be part of the show. And if you're watching the radio on YouTube, Facebook, or X Twitter, give us a drop us a stream comment and we'll read it on the radio. Be part of the show. Be part of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach. It's always great when you guys participate.
Does it have to be a music show? It can be theater. It can be anything.
Whatever. Any live show.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Great.
Yeah. A lot of leeway here. Yeah.
There you go.
It'll be fun. I've already got my answers, guys. I'm not trying to be like a teacher's pet or anything, but I'm ready.
Well, aren't you the teacher? You're the one who posed the question.
I'm my own best friend.
There you go.
I'm my own best student. But we've got stories, Greg. We got stories. Let's do it.
The first big story.
Big one.
I was going to say, what? Okay, you go, because you went.
All right. Oof. Well, I know we have, they're all big, and they're all, a lot of them are local. So mm-hmm. Out of three. Annette Ziegler, a conservative Supreme Court justice, announced today she will not seek re-election in 2027, Greg. That's a 20-year run for her. She's been in the seat since, on the bench since 2007. Here's my issue. And I don't think people ever need to say this. She's saying it's time for her to step away so she can spend more time with her family.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. We just kind of assume people are going to do that, but you get that a lot from athletes, celebrities. I need to spend more time with. No, you're done. You just want to retire. You don't really even have to say that. You've been on the bench for 20 years. I think that's all we need to know.
I always think it's just a throwaway excuse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, I'm sure the job of Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice is a busy one, but I don't imagine that it's a job where you're like, I'm coming home late from the office tonight. I got to go on that Supreme Court Justice trip. I'm going to be out of town for 2 weeks selling the Supreme Court. I mean, honestly, 20 years is two terms. That's good. Move on. You don't need to be on that. And that is, I mean, last year, Rebecca Bradley was expected to run again, and she dropped out within a few months of last year's election. So we have a Supreme Court race election coming up next month in a few weeks, and it's an open seat between Chris Taylor and Maria Lazar, and looks like we'll have an open seat next year as well then, too. We have, after next year, there will not be another Supreme Court election until, 2028. No, we have one every single year. Oh, my goodness. So this year, next year, 28, 29, 30. Yeah, it's just going to keep going. Oh, my goodness. It never ends.
Am I right about that? Have liberals won the last four seats?
They've won the last three.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. They won the last three. Well, Janet Protasiewicz won 2 years ago. Susan Crawford won last year.
And Chris Taylor's pretty popular too.
I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, like, I feel like this time last year, it was crazy because Elon Musk was throwing $100 million into the race itself. Like, we're like, this is a state Supreme Court race. It did nothing. It told that man to go home to your weird looking ugly cars. But yeah, it's a liberal run court, as some would say. I just think it's people who vote their conscience based on the facts, but that's, you know, whatever. But also, it is all women except for Brian Hagedorn. I mean, that's pretty amazing if you ask me. So there's that. There will be another open race next year for state Supreme Court. We're not even done with this one yet, and we're already talking about next year. Good gravy.
That is insane. And this next race, though, is going to be interesting. Chris Taylor, Maria Lazar, as you said, the classic Madison versus Western Milwaukee suburbs or Waukesha County. And I think, as Maria Lazar said, she is a will not let people take liberties with the Constitution. That's not
yes.
So great. That'll be interesting.
how vague and really nothing. Boy, oh boy. I'm not going to take liberties with the Constitution. Okay, well, the guy in the White House is. So talk to him.
Good luck.
All right.
All right, we crushed that one, Greg.
No, we did great. I mean, geez.
Hit it out of the park.
Cheese and rice.
I think it's right. I think we're ready, Dom.
Yeah.
The second big story.
What do you think, buddy? Do we go Scott Fitzgerald?
Let's do that. Yeah.
Scott Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Scott Fitzgerald was in the news. He was told up front, which is a WISN like local talk show, kind of like a Meet the Press, but for WISN here in Milwaukee. White House likely to see more funding for Iran war, quote, any day. So I guess it's a war. We're calling it a war. But I love this story. We'll put this in the show notes. This is on WIS Politics. U.S. Representative Scott Fitzgerald. He says the White House expects soon to ask Congress for more money for the Iran war, quote, any day. We had an open discussion about it within our own conference with Speaker Johnson. Fitzgerald said on WISN's 12's Upfront, and it pretty I like here, it says, I really don't have the type of intel or knowledge. I don't think any rank-and-file member of Congress would have that information to be able to say one way or the other whether or not they would be able to support that. And then it goes on to say, and certainly with the air superiority, which we already gained, which is amazing to me how quickly that was able to happen, that certainly doesn't warrant it. He doesn't know anything about it, but he loves what's happening.
Yeah, it's so weird, too, that, like, Congress never approved a war.
Nope. Or,
you know, we were sort of circumvented. So it's like, well, is it just like a rubber? Do they just give him whatever they want now? I mean, he's acting like it's a done deal. We're giving you money. Just tell us what you need, even though you didn't even come to us first and get the okay to go to, quote, war, unquote. So, yeah, it's a really weird situation.
Absolutely. And so Scott Fitzgerald, I guess, you know, according to him, they're just going to do it. I mean, he says, quote, I'm not going to pretend I have firsthand knowledge of troop movements because it's not something that's typically briefed to members of Congress until it's actually happening. I know there are troops, good job, in both the Army Reserve and in the Guard. And you have to remember, the Guard typically still are those with the weapon systems. It's like he's talking about what he knows about his old job because he was in the National Guard, the Wisconsin National Guard. Or I'm sorry, the U.S. Army Reserve. My apologies. But he doesn't know anything other than that. All I know is that the president dropped bombs on Iran with Israel, didn't ask Congress, and now Congress is like, yeah, we're not going to do anything about it. Give him money. It's fine. Go ahead. It's fine.
Yeah, it's strange times we live in. I know Senator Tammy Baldwin weighed in and said that, you know, reminded everybody that Trump ripped up the Iran nuclear deal. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason we might be in this situation. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And I know over the weekend, Greg, Carolyn Leavitt, the press secretary, mentioned that the president is keeping options open, like sending in ground troops. What? And she got pressed on that. And it's like they're just sort of supporting whatever. And I guess that's their job. He's their boss. Yeah. But crazy.
Well, you support and protect the Constitution. What they're doing is supporting the president and protecting the president and worshiping the president as a king. That's a big, big difference. Huge, huge difference. So,
yeah
well but said. more to come with that in the coming days as this war, not war, is being settled on. So before we get out of here, let's go into the third story then.
The third big story.
Oil prices going up. Gas prices going up. According to AAA, jump at the pump as national average goes up nearly 27 cents. It's now 347 to 48 throughout the country, according to AAA. Oil prices are going up because what's happening in Iran, and you're all feeling at the pump. We talked about this yesterday, Pete. I said that this time last week, gas was $2.40.
Right.
Then it became $2.99. It's $3.19 now.
And I just saw, I think it was a rep from Gas Buddy or someone I was listening to earlier that said gas is expected to hit $4 a gallon on average nationally. Yep. That means probably what? $4.25 in Milwaukee, $3.50 here, $5 in Chicago or LA or whatever.
It's $5 in California right now.
Wow. Yeah, that's where. I mean, what we just said about the Supreme Court race and Scott Fitzgerald, people probably are like, oh, yeah, okay, interesting. What? $100 a barrel? That really affects people. And I just filled up today and last week, it was less than $20 to fill up. I have a little hybrid and then I have a gas guzzler, but the hybrid, it was less than $20 to fill up. And today it was well over $20.
All because of this Iran war that we are somehow in, not in. I don't know. Is it a war? Who knows?
Don't ask Congress.
Nope. No.
All right. So we are coming right back, ladies and gentlemen, with our first guest of the night, Kathy O'Neill, author of Weapons of Math, Greg, Destruction. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we will be back right after that. This is Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the 7 Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Nightlight. I am Pete Schwabe, sitting across the state from my co-host, Mr. Greg Bach. It is great to have you with us tonight on the Civic Media Network. Our next guest has a PhD in math and is the author of Weapons of Math Destruction, How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. And in 2022, the book The Shame Machine, Who profits in the age of humiliation? She's also the founder of Orca, O'Neill Risk Consulting and Algorithmic Auditing. You must have very busy days. It is my pleasure to welcome our guest, Kathy O'Neill. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, nice to meet you, Pete.
Nice to meet you as well. That's Greg Baca sitting across from us.
Hello. Hey, Greg.
Hi.
It's great to have you here. Let's start with, let's just jump in and ask you about Weapons of Math Destruction. Love the title.
Thank you.
It's one of those books I had to read a few of the passages about three times to fully grasp what you were saying, which means it's probably a really good book. So please tell us about this Weapons of Math Destruction.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a book that came out 10 years ago, almost, like September 2016. That I wrote basically as a call to arms for the public to start worrying about technology, and in particular, the role of algorithms making secret decisions about our lives. And I identified a bunch of, like, I was actually a blogger back in the day. Now I'm a podcaster, obviously, but back in the day, I had a blog called Math Babe, and I would just, you know, talk about having worked in finance and all the regrets and embarrassments about that. And I joined Occupy Wall Street, and I was working as a data scientist to, like, you know, make a living, living in New York City with three kids. And my blog, like the people, my readers, the blogger readers were so wonderful. And I would start, you know, I started this kind of running list of creepy algorithms, I call them. and they supplied me with more, and I was like, oh my God, there's just a ton of creepy algorithms. And they all are like potentially extremely powerful to ruin people's lives. And I sort of developed a taxonomy of them and eventually came to the concept of a weapon of math destruction. So I wrote a book about them. And, you know, as you saw in the book, like, it basically is, at every moment that a person's life touches bureaucracy, whether that's like getting into college or getting a job or getting a mortgage, or, you know, almost at any moment when you hit a bureaucracy, you're being evaluated by an algorithm.
Well, and I think that's, you know, that's a word, the word algorithm is something that's come so much into the zeitgeist over the past few years, and people try to quantified in various ways. But like, as you said, I mean, just from the fact that, like, it doesn't even have to be getting a mortgage or signing up, like going to college. I mean, if I just open a rewards account at a grocery store, they've got my information that goes in an algorithm. They send me, like, we are just thrown into it no matter what. You're in it regardless of whether you try or not, because it's everywhere, correct?
Yeah, you could think of it, and that's a great example. Like, if you get like a card at a grocery store and they collect the data on what you're buying, and then they send you coupons that are directed to trying to get you to buy slightly more of slightly more expensive things. It's like a one-way mirror. I want you to think of it that way. Like, it's a one-way mirror of like them looking at us and trying to figure out how to extract more money from us. And like the actual way they do it is through algorithms, because they're trying to predict things. They would call them predictions, but the truth is there's a lot of power in those predictions. They actually don't just predict the future, they cause the future. And when they're predicting you, they're not just predicting what you're going to do, but sort of pushing you and nudging you towards those things in a really very potent way.
In this book, Weapons of Math Destruction, you say it's dedicated to all the underdogs. Who are the underdogs, and are there underdogs in particular that this book is dedicated to?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I learned pretty quickly when I started studying this, actually, I was a data scientist when I wrote this book, right? So I was doing this, actually, in the context of travel. I was working at an ad tech company that is no longer in business because it was a terrible idea. it was like, you know, deciding who deserves what kind of, you know, ads in the world of travel, whether that's hotels or flights or whatever. And one of the things I realized almost immediately when I started doing this, because it wasn't that different from the kind of work I had done trying to predict the futures market when I was a hedge fund quant. So, you know, it's just predicting people instead of markets. It's actually a lot easier to predict people. They're much more predictable. But the biggest, by far the biggest statistical signal I was searching for was wealth. I was just looking for people with money. But that, you know, and that's just a fact about online interactions? What most data is being collected about you to find out what you have money, whether you have money, and what you're going to spend it on. But secondarily and tertiarily, like, what we're looking for is your wealth, your gender, and your race. And one of the things that, you know, those are three really easy things to figure out about someone, it turns out. And people are profiled based on those, you know, not that many options in those various three different dimensions. And you're basically we're all being boxed into these profiles, and we're being given what they think we deserve. And so when I say underdogs, I'm really talking about the people that are on the short ends of those sticks. Cause there's, you know, there's, let me just tell you a story, which I think is in the book. Like, when I was working at that ad tech company, one of the investors came and like gathered us around him and said like what his future of the internet would be. And he was really like, if you think of a VC, he's like a venture capitalist. They're architects of the space that we live in online. They decide what happens and what doesn't happen. They fund it or don't fund it. And his vision was, you know, I'm going to see ads for trips to Aruba and jet skis. And I'm never, ever, ever again going to have to see a University of Phoenix ad, because that's not for people like me. And like, people around me laughed. It was like, oh, like, why would a rich white man be like preyed upon by a for-profit college? A rich, educated white man. Mm-hmm. That's the fourth thing. How educated are you? Whereas like, and I was like, I was curious about that. You know, I was like, well, I've never seen a University of Phoenix ad, but I looked it up. And at that, even in that quarter that he came to talk to us, that quarter, Google Ads, that was a single biggest Google ad sell, was to University of Phoenix.
We are coming right back after this very short break with our guest, Kathy O'Neill. Don't go anywhere. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network. Welcome back to Nightlight. I'm Pete Schwabe, joined by my co-host, Greg Bach. It is great to have you with us tonight. Dom Lee working the board. We are learning a lot tonight about math and algorithms and all kinds of stuff that is being put into layman's terms by our current guest. She has a PhD in math and is the author of Weapons of Math Destruction: How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. Kathy O'Neill joins us over the stream.
You know, we see these ads come through our social media, and you said, they said, we want to give them what we think they want. How strong are people at resisting, or do they eventually, if they see, if the algorithm is used correctly for the folks who are advertising, is there a way for that? Do they just say, just wait it out? You send them enough ads, they will at the very least check it out. So say even just going to University of Phoenix to check out courses, the clicks, the engagement is also what they're looking for. How strong are these formulas that really just keep getting at people until they finally just bend and break and go and do the thing they want them to do?
Yeah, those for-profit colleges, and I'll add another category of predatory ads, which is like payday lending. Mm-hmm. Now, to be clear, they only get shown when somebody says like, I want to go to college, or like, mm-hmm. I need a loan, you know, like it's, so it is like a response to something, at least back in the day when it was like a Google search, right? But those things were among the most expensive eyeballs. You know, they would be paid $10, $20, $50 for a click. What does that mean? That means that it was like a very, very like good rate of, mm-hmm. of stickiness. Like, when once you got the click, you got the person. They'd call, they'd follow up with phone calls and emails, and like, they would really do the hard sell. I mean, I read some of the like Corinthian College, advice to the recruiters, and it even said like, you should use phrases like, don't you want your children to have a better life than you have? It was like, jeez, absolutely predatory. So that was kind of like how they got their hooks in you, was the ad tech space. And again, the ad tech space back then and still does like very crucially rely on this profile of you as like, how educated, how rich, like what's your race, what's your gender. And many, many more things by this point.
Yeah.
I played football at Corinthian for 2 years, and then I blew out my knee. But so how do we, it's funny, Kathy, because, you know, we say something in our house and we don't realize what's listening, if it's Alexa or Siri. But moments later, we get ads on the internet. Where is our information, if you know this, where is it going? Does it go to some portal, or is it join an algorithm of some sort? How do they do that so quickly?
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes to Amazon if you're using Alexa. I mean, Amazon, we all think of Amazon as like a thing that started out with books, and it sells this and it sells that and it sells this. I don't want you to think of it as a seller. I want you to think of it as like a middleman that has eyes on us, the people that purchase, and eyes on the producers. It really has stuck itself inside, in between. It's like, you know, we imagine like a marketplace where we go buy things from people that make things. That would be a really old fashioned idea, where you go to an artisanal crafts market and like buy stuff from the people that made it. It's like the opposite of that. It's like, how far can you get from that? Right. Mm-hmm. Because if I explain this to you, and it would take a little while, but if I explain it to you long enough, you'd feel sorry for both the buyers and the sellers on the, like Amazon screws both of them. They have basically surveillance systems in both directions. Right. So they managed to screw the people selling on Amazon, in part because they, like, whenever they see a better opportunity, they jump in and do it, right? They will sell their own products because they're like, oh, look, this is a high profit margin enterprise. And how do they know that? Because they have so much surveillance. But also they screw their supply chain like very, very tightly. Now you could say, oh, this is great for the buyers, but it's actually not true. Like, think about this. And I did this experiment with somebody recently. We at the same time searched for exactly the same thing on our different Amazon accounts. And she is a student, by the way, like a law student. I'm a professional. So that Amazon, and I buy a lot of stuff on Amazon. Amazon knows a lot about me. They know I have money, and they know I'm really efficient. So I just click and take the first thing pretty much. So we both searched for a beanbag chair, and the first beanbag chair I got was $188, and the first beanbag chair she got was $88. And I couldn't find the one that she got by scrolling. Once she shared her screen and I actually could like search for exactly the same item, I got it. But my point being that like they don't need to like price differential for me. Like they don't need to have the same product with a different price. They don't do that. They tried that, they got in trouble for that. But they just pollute my atmosphere with the stuff they want me to buy, right? Mm-hmm. It's just imagine it like this, like it's so virtual, but imagine going into an actual store and like as you're going in, they're building the store and they're choosing the things they want you to see at eye level in the first aisle. So then you walk in, you get to see what they want you to see. That's how I feel about the Amazon thing. So they managed to like get me to pay $100 more for a beanbag chair, even as they're making the beanbag chair manufacturers like almost go out of business. It's quite a grift that they have going on.
Well, it's something you use the Amazon example. I find very interesting because this past weekend I saw no less than 6 or 7 times on streaming networks, how when you shop at Amazon, 60% goes to small business. Like they want, Amazon really wants you to believe that you are just going into the digital version of a farmer's market or a maker's market, when really what you're doing is going into their surveillance system.
Greg, thank you for mentioning that. I threw up in my mouth when I saw that. I saw that same thing and I was like, oh my God. Yes, Amazon, you are actually screwing these small manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Thank you for making that look like it's a nice, quaint thing.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not quaint.
Yeah. I had some friends. I've had a few friends work at Amazon in various positions. Two of them worked in the warehouse and had the exact experience you expect. And then two others worked in higher positions. And they were like, I don't know what people are talking about. And within a year and a half, everything we're talking about, the surveillance, the rules, the overbearing everything of that company trying to know you and keep you locked in, they left because like, oh, it just took us a while. But this company, it's like surveillance with a nice little store in front. I mean, it's
and I
don't say that saying, oh, to heck with Amazon. I just had an Amazon package delivered this morning.
Totally addicted.
But yeah, But I mean, I think that what leads me to my next question is the algorithm's not going away.
Right.
And to, you know, if you have the money or the wherewithal to, quote, get off the grid, go for it. But how does one say, all right, how do I curate my algorithm? How do I look at me inside the algorithm? How do I keep myself safe and just understand that, yes, if I go look at handbags, I'm going to get a ton of handbag ads. Just how do we operate within the algorithm to keep ourselves sane?
Yeah. Man, I really wish I had a good answer to that. I really do. I was thinking about it because it's like, take yourself out of the grid. You can't really do that, right?
Yeah.
You can't, like, you personally might be able to do that. Although you're always going to be in cameras if you go to a store, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even those stores are going to be, they're starving the stores, right? Amazon shopping is starving the stores. They're not going to last that much longer. There's this something called like predatory pricing, where just like companies sort of make their prices lower than their competitors until their competitors wither and die. And I feel like Amazon is doing that to all stores in the country at all times, essentially. It's an incredibly massive play. And at the end of it, it's going to work. You know, I don't know how to keep it from working.
Yeah.
But I just, to go to earlier question, Pete, that you asked is like, where does that data go? The truth is, it doesn't all go to Amazon. Alexa stuff does.
Right.
Like a lot of the data that I allow to be surveilled and collected about me goes to Google because I have an Android instead of an iPhone, and I use Gmail. You know, like it's going to these massive big tech companies. You know, they're all using that to improve their algorithms, right? So it's been interesting for me to watch AI. You know, how, like, for example, when you do a Google search, Gemini often answers you. That's like such an amazing loss for them. You know, if you think about the billions of dollars they're losing in ad revenue by allowing you to look at the Gemini answer instead of clicking on an ad, like that's how they make money, clicks, right? So they're not making money when they answer your question with Gemini. What are they doing though? It must be worth it to them, or they're not doing it. What they're doing is collecting your data.
Yeah.
You know, that, and that means that that's a way of measuring how worthwhile your data is. And in this case, it's like the interactions with the large language model data is what I'm talking about. But that's like a huge play that they're doing there to try to sort of dominate the large language model space, because like OpenAI had a head start. But just, I wish somebody would do that calculation. I don't have quite enough information, but somebody does, of how much money they have lost by having Gemini answer so many of those questions.
Well, and that was actually going to be my next question, but yeah, I that's something that they have to, I mean, they make so much money that a loss can't be that important to them, because they, you know, they make it up in so many any other places. And we're talking a lot about shopping and social media and those things that we've all had conversations at lunches or brunches about, like, oh man, I was talking about this thing, and then boom, 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 there are a bunch of ads. That's all something we know on a day-to-day basis. And I'll take it darker because we're talking about big data, but when we go beyond the Amazons and the Googles and all that, what else is being done with our information via the algorithms that goes to maybe even a darker place that's more harmful for society, ourselves, wherever we live?
Yeah, well, I mean, so yeah, going back to the question of opting out, like you might be able to, you know, buy fewer things and never buy anything on Amazon, but you're not going to be able to opt out of like ever getting car insurance or a mortgage, or unless you're independently wealthy, you can maybe get avoided a mortgage, or going to college, or getting a job, or being evaluated at your job, or heaven forbid, if you get arrested, like being evaluated by a recidivism risk algorithm in the courtroom. There's all sorts of algorithms that what I mean to say is like, they're not opt out. They're just not.
Yeah.
Like if you want to get a job nowadays, you're going to be subject to an algorithmic gaze. And there's no reason in my experience to think that is a particularly wise, like a wise gaze. It's a very, very random, slightly racist, sexist thing, you know? And when I say slightly racist and sexist, like this stuff is just codifying, you know, what has happened in the past. you know, mm-hmm. at best. Sometimes it's kind of a random number generator. I kind of almost like those because at least they're fair. But most of the time they're like trying to say like, oh, people like you got hired in the past, so we're going to give you a shot, you know? And it's like, oh, mm-hmm. do you think that sounds like the best possible way of figuring out the most productive worker? Because I don't.
Well, you know, this is fun, Kathy. You're awesome. Yeah, thank really you fun. For
if your bluegrass group ever goes on tour, does us some shows, let us know. Seriously.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. That would be really, really fun.
What's the name of the group again?
It's called the 5-Year Plan.
And what's the name of your podcast?
It's called the AI Skeptics, and it's fun. I hope some of your listeners join us.
Absolutely. Check out. Check out the podcast. Check out the band. I'm going to check it out now because I love bluegrass music. So thank you so much, Kathy, for being
here. Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you,
Kathy. Keep up the great work.
All right. When we come back after this very short break, we're going to tell you about a Wisconsinite who might get his own statue. This is Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
But now it's getting late, and the moon is climbing high.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabe, sitting across the state from Mr. Greg Bach. How are we doing, guys?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Dom, how you doing? You hanging in there?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. Right. Thank you for asking.
Outstanding. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach, and we are in the final throes of hour number one on this Monday night. Great to have you with us. Our question of the night, be part of the fun, folks. What is the greatest live show you've ever seen? Mm. We will jump into some of your texts after the news at the top of the hour. It could be any show. To clarify Greg's question from earlier, it could be a live, like Broadway-type show, a stand-up comedy show, a theater, a performance of some sort, a rock concert, country concert, opera, if you will. Greg, you like the opera?
I enjoy it. I'm not the world's biggest fan, but I've been to a few, and I enjoy them. Take that, Timothée Chalamet.
I'm kind of with you. I like a little bit of everything. I have kind of an eclectic taste, but I don't like it all. I'm not certainly an expert at anything, but I'm with you. Mm-hmm. So any live show, folks, let us know. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, or you can text us on the Civic Media app, or if you're watching us on YouTube, Facebook, or X Twitter, you could drop us a stream comment and let us know what your favorite live show ever was. And boy, that was fun. Are you a little scared after listening to Kathy talk?
Not really. Everything she said, both I knew most of that to a certain extent, and it also makes sense. So for me, it's just a matter of like what we're talking about as far as like holding legislators accountable and things like that. And plus, also, great thing about that interview, folks, is this is going to be another web exclusive. There is plenty of more content. That was just a smattering, a smidge, a pinch, a skosh of what we talked about with Kathy. But it's a very interesting conversation. We'll be putting up more of those extended web exclusives on the website for you to listen to watch. Can they watch them, Dom? Was that a watchable one?
Yes, absolutely.
It's a watchable one too. All right, so there you go. I know
it's
our second
one, right?
Mm-hmm. It's our second one, baby. We got
Jason Sheff, Chicago singer, and Kathy. Now, mm-hmm. So that's great.
It's wonderful. And Susan from McFarland is on the call line right now. She wanted to talk about this past discussion we just had with Kathy. Good evening, Susan. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I will say the best show I've ever seen was Kenny G. That was amazing.
He's an amazing musician.
So I got to see him, and I was very pleased with that. But my comment really is going back to Amazon and, you know, how they get everybody to buy their products. But if we would more shop locally, and sometimes, you know, I've had the experience, like for Christmas, I make it a point not to go on Amazon. I find what people want. They give me their list. And then I go out and source it locally because then I'm shopping for with the people in my community or, you know, at least people in Wisconsin. And I just feel as though it's called being intentional because I just feel really very passionately that the more you shop locally, that money goes back into your community. And
absolutely.
And you're not going to get rid of Goliath necessarily, but I think you can actually eat away at their profits by if everybody would shop for Christmas, if you have 10 or 15 people that just shop locally for the things that they want on their wish list. And I get some really nice gifts from my grandchildren, and they're all shop locally. So anyway, that's my big beef, is that more people are just, in my extent, lazy. I can get it tomorrow to Amazon, but what if I went to a store, even a musical store or an electronic store? I could get the same thing. Maybe I'd have to pay a little bit more, but you're actually supporting your local community.
Absolutely. Great Thank stuff. You so much for calling, Susan. We really appreciate you reaching out. I don't disagree with that as well. I think it's important just to find local. I know it can, you know, Pete, not everyone's made of money, but, you know, if it's a small thing, it's a small gift, it's always great to put those dollars back in your community because they really stay in the community and it does more good than people know.
Absolutely. And you vote with your money, whether you have a lot of it or a little bit, where you spend that, all of that is being clocked and tracked. And it really does. I think if enough people do it, it makes an impact. That was a great phone call.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate everyone who's been calling in and leaving comments. We'll be talking more about that in the second hour because we will get to the question, by the way, the question of the night, which is
read some text. Yeah.
There you go.
We've also got Greg, if we could squeeze this in before the break. I mentioned this to you earlier. Christina Laurie, who is a Wisconsin-based influencer, says in a post yesterday, it's time for a Chris Farley statue in the city where he was born. Madison's bronze Fonz, if you will. I say, why not? Chris Farley, he at the moment anyway, is maybe the most famous Madisonian in that industry. She said she saw people discussing it on Reddit and, you know, if it could be somewhere close to where he was, where he grew up in Maple Bluff, or maybe a van down by the river, you could put a statue by his,
I think that'd be great. Plus also, I mean, we don't have time right now, but I have thoughts on the bronze Fonz. So I think the more statues we put up for actual human beings that really actually live, then the better. But I'm all in favor of a statue for Chris Farley. Absolutely.
He's a real guy.
Mm-hmm. He's a very real guy. real in our heart. Real. Yep. Absolutely.
I would love to hear your thoughts on the bronze Fonz.
I have some. But I think, put a statue of him in Madison and then put a statue of him at Marquette University too. Two statues.
Yeah.
One that's like in Madison, like where he's just like regular Chris Farley, and then down by the river or Matt Foley or something like that. Matt Foley at Marquette. Yeah. And regular Chris in Madison. I think that's a fantastic idea.
I love it. And it's like the Sylvester Stallone, the Rocky, kind of to your point, Greg, why do you have a statue of Rocky, a fictional character? We have I think it was the Bill Burr joke. You have Joe Frazier, an actual heavyweight champ. Why do you have him on the steps there? So there you go.
I don't disagree.
All right, we are coming back. We're going to break for the news, and we will come back and read your text and kind of reset everything. Tim Sowers from the Overture Center is here in hour number two, and just a lot more fun, folks, headed your way on a Monday. Probably more fun than you should have on a Monday. We're coming right back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network.
I want to see you dance again because I'm still in love with you.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.